Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
Allegations of a cover-up. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Glad you're with us. Monday, July 21st. Here's what's coming up this hour.
There are now specific accusations from the U.S. about the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 over eastern Ukraine. We'll take you to Moscow for the latest.
As Israeli ground troops battle Hamas militants in Gaza, the two sides encounter the deadliest day of fighting in their most recent conflict.
A raging wildfire in Washington state has destroyed roughly 300,000 acres and more than 100 homes.
And the growth of anti-immigration rallies around the U.S.
About 57,000 unaccompanied minors have illegally crossed into the U.S. over the last 9 months or so, fleeing violence and poverty, hoping to reunite with family here, which many of them have. So we have a situation that is unprecedented in the fact that these are mainly kids.
Wall Street Journal reporter Miriam Jordan on the response to the tens of thousands of illegal Central Americans entering the U.S. Her report in about 20 minutes. Increased bloodshed in Gaza as Israeli ground forces moved into the most densely populated city for the first time in nearly 2 weeks of fighting. They destroyed tunnels and drew heavy fire from Hamas militants. Israel said 13 soldiers were killed, and Gaza officials said 96 Palestinians were killed yesterday. The Palestinian Health Ministry said more than 425 Palestinians have been killed since the fighting began. The United Nations said about three-fourths of the Palestinian casualties have been civilians. Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had been initially reluctant to send in ground forces for fear the military would suffer heavy casualties.
Hamas wants to kill civilians on the Israeli side, and the amazing, grotesque, and gruesome fact is they want to have as many civilians killed on the Palestinian side.
Israel launched a ground invasion of Gaza on Thursday night with a high priority on destroying a network of cross-border tunnels that militants used to infiltrate Israel. By the way, Secretary of State John Kerry is expected in Cairo today to try to work out a ceasefire. Specific finger pointing by the U.S. at Russia in the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17, which took 298 lives. The Obama administration, for the first time, is now publicly charging Russian President Vladimir Putin's government with supplying the rebels the long-range rockets used in last Thursday's strike, and also likely providing the separatists with training. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Kerry yesterday made the rounds on the Sunday TV talk shows, warning Mr. Putin, quote, for the last time, to disarm pro-Russian separatists and stabilize Ukraine.
We know that immediately after the shoot, the social media documented the self-proclaimed defense minister of the People's Republic of Donetsk, as they call it. He was bragging on the social media about shooting down a transport plane.
We take it out of Moscow for Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky. Anton, what's the latest?
The United States has been suggesting since pretty soon after the crash happened that the separatist rebels held some responsibility. They are now leveling their most specific charges to date, saying that the separatist rebels used a anti-aircraft missile launcher that had been provided by the Russians, that they then proceeded to hide the evidence, potentially transporting that missile launcher back to Russia after the crash happened, and in addition may have been getting training from the Russian military on how to use that very complicated anti-aircraft system.
All right, and specifically, what does the U.S. say it has? Their satellite imagery of this attempted cover-up of moving the missile launcher?
Yes, there's satellite imagery. You know, there's also intercepted calls that the Ukrainians have that the U.S. has said are authentic. In those calls, the rebels are heard talking about sort of having accidentally shot down a passenger plane. But not all of that stuff is public at this point, so it's sort of hard to assess some of this evidence.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky in Moscow. We are seeing, too, a stronger reaction from parts of Europe than we've come to expect.
Absolutely. This tragedy has really, really struck a nerve across Europe. I think it's really brought the conflict home for many people. Obviously, the country that's most been struck is the Netherlands, where some 200 people died on that plane. And what that's resulted in is leaders in Europe being much more aggressive in threatening sanctions if Russia doesn't put pressure on the rebels to change their behavior. You know, the way in which victims' remains have been treated on that crash site and the pictures we've seen of the rebels walking around with cigarette in hand and some of the victims' personal belongings, that's also really struck a nerve. So we've now seen countries such as France and Italy, which have previously been fairly skeptical about sanctions, saying they would be ready to support more sanctions if Russia doesn't change its behavior. And Germany as well seems increasingly frustrated. So the key there is going to be what happens on Tuesday when EU foreign ministers meet in Brussels and start talking about this stuff.
Okay, so what's being done about the potential of a contaminated crash site at this point?
International experts, some are there from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. They've had trouble accessing the site sort of in a comprehensive way. But Vladimir Putin now is also calling on this international civil aviation body to arrive. And we'll see if that happens today on Monday. But at this point, I think it's just not clear just how uncontaminated the crash site is.
Give a quick explanation, too, of how difficult some European leaders feel it is to support sanctions, because countries like Bulgaria or Italy are heavy users of Russian energy, right? So they're concerned about some kind of retaliation, perhaps?
Yeah, what these countries often say is, look, we can't choose our neighbors. And Russia is, in a sense, our biggest neighbor, one of our biggest trading partners and energy providers. So we have to think really hard about penalizing them. So yes, for a lot of countries, Russia is the biggest provider of energy. For other countries, including the Netherlands and Germany, it's a really big trading partner. It's tough. And you also have a population, especially in Germany, for example, that's very skeptical of whether sanctions can work and that doesn't want to see their government drag them into a confrontation with Russia.
Thanks, Anton. Wall Street Journal reporter Anton Troyanovsky with us this morning from Moscow. 14 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing. So I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Here's something aviation experts are wrestling with following the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17. It was flying in airspace identified as safe by Ukrainian officials and a number of international airlines, even as other carriers avoided those troubled skies over eastern Ukraine. Question now is, if some officials knew highly capable missiles were in the hands of rebels, why wasn't a more comprehensive ban put in place before the shooting? Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Robert Wall on the T-Mobile hotline. Robert, what's the problem here?
Really what happens, it's just a fluke of geography. You've got all these routes that are crisscrossing across the country. For example, if you want to get from Scandinavia to the Middle East Gulf hubs where Emirates and Qatar are picking up hundreds of thousands of passengers, well, then you have to go via Ukraine if you want to do it directly. And similarly, when you want to get from Western Europe to many, many locations in Asia and you want to do it quickly, efficiently, burning the least fuel, that's the way to go.
So what do airlines need to do now?
There are still some routes through Ukraine. It's not entirely blocked off. But essentially what happens is you have to fly longer routes, and that means burning a bit more fuel and spending a bit more time in the air.
Have there been any problems with airspace in surrounding areas?
It was certainly one thing the planners in Europe were a bit worried about, whether what would be the impact on the airspace around. But it's been manageable so far. So airspace got a bit more dense in neighboring countries, Romania, Bulgaria, but it didn't seem to create a massive problem.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Robert Wall. Any airlines in particular, Robert, that are really going to be impacted by this?
I think more the issue is who isn't impacted so much. The U.S. carriers are probably least impacted because that's not how they go. It's not one of their main arteries. And otherwise, you know, the Asians, the Europeans, they probably all share a bit of the pain.
Does it appear that airlines are taking extra precautions in safety by flying far away from dangerous areas?
Well, there is a what we call a NOTAM out, a notice to airmen that alerts people about what flight zones are restricted. You know, if the airspace is open, an airline can fly. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, there are pilots or airlines that will put in an extra safety margin. That's entirely their call, but they're not required to do so. And what's interesting in the long term, though, here is will this cause regulators to reconsider how large, you know, how big the safety margin should really be.
Thanks, Robert. Wall Street Journal reporter Robert Wall. It is 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Secretary of State John Kerry calls the circumstantial evidence extraordinary and says it is the moment of truth for Russia as Washington levels its most explicit allegations yet of Russia's involvement in the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17.
There are an enormous array of facts that point at Russia's support for and involvement in this effort.
Kerry was on ABC's This Week. Almost 300 people were killed in the downing of the plane. The UN Security Council is calling for an immediate ceasefire as deadly fighting continued between Israeli forces and Hamas in Gaza. Reuters reported that the Palestinian death toll had risen to 484. Israel said 18 soldiers and 2 civilians had died so far. In eastern Washington state, at least one person is reported dead as a result of a wildfire. It's raged across several heavily forested counties. About 150 homes were destroyed. Officials said hundreds of residents had been evacuated. U.S. business conditions are expected to continue to improve and did so in the second quarter following a very weak first one. Jack Kleinhens is with the National Association of Business Economics.
Our panelists indicated that employment grew and is expected to grow, and really very minor issues in terms of the labor market other than it's still difficult to find skilled workers and it has been a challenge for some time.
U.S. stock futures are trending lower this morning following a positive week. Overseas today, major Asian markets closed lower, although the Nikkei was not open because of a holiday. Verizon is expected to unveil much faster upload speeds for putting your videos and pictures on the web. Verizon has seen slowing growth but enjoys an edge over traditional cable providers when it comes to web speeds.
Do not want war!
Apes take over the box office as Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is the top banana for a second straight weekend. But overall revenues were down at theaters from last year at this time.
What's going on here?
I don't know.
Are we not going to the movies in the summer?
You think you might see the new Planet of the Apes movie? The original was terrific with Charlton Heston.
Yeah, no, not on my list. Not on my list.
It's kind of a campy cult favorite.
Right, right. And it's not anything specific against Planet of the Apes. It's just so difficult right now to get to the movies.
Yeah, I can't even remember the last film I actually saw on the big screen at this point.
Yeah.
That's not
See, and you
it's
had
very good.
And you forever have had the advantage over me in going to the theater, and now you're not even going that much.
What can I say?
The changing times. Thanks, Gina. 23 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. The influx of tens of thousands of Central Americans into the U.S. has energized anti-illegal immigration activists who organized rallies across the country in recent days, some 40 of them in Southern California, hundreds held across the rest of the U.S. in places like Little Rock, Arkansas, Dallas, Philadelphia. There are even counter-protesters. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Miriam Jordan, who's based in Los Angeles. Miriam, set this up.
About 57,000 unaccompanied minors have illegally crossed into the U.S. over the last 9 months or so, fleeing violence and poverty, hoping to reunite with family here, which many of them have. So we have a situation that is unprecedented in the fact that these are mainly kids or, you know, teenagers for the most part.
Any idea, Miriam, how many more we can expect across the border?
The officials expect about 90,000 of them to 100,000 of them, you know, possibly by the end of the year. That's, again, an unprecedented number, which has been growing related to the increase in gang violence in countries like Honduras and El Salvador in particular. In Guatemala, the main driving force appears to be, economic desperation.
How does this compare to past influxes?
Well, that's one thing that's really interesting. I mean, 57 or 100,000 undocumented immigrants flocking to the country is really a very small number compared to the peak numbers we had, like in 2000 when the Border Patrol caught 1.6 million people at the southwest border. That meant that even more than 1.6 million people actually were sneaking across, because we have no way of counting people who actually successfully sneak into the country and who are not encountered by the Border Patrol. The number of people who were caught crossing was 1.2 million in 2004. Last year, it was 414,000, and it was already slightly higher than 2012.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Miriam Jordan. How have different communities reacted to this?
Well, I think what makes this influx different from influxes in the past is that it consists of these minors, and because they need to be protected according to U.S. law, they're not immediately sent back, and so they're here, and they have to be sheltered. Some of these children have been put on buses and taken to facilities in small towns, such as Murrieta in California and, Oracle in Arizona. There was rumors that there was going to be a busload arriving. And so these communities have felt now the impact of illegal immigration at their doorstep in a way that they haven't before. And that has really fired a lot of people up.
Thanks, Miriam. Wall Street Journal reporter Miriam Jordan, who's based in Los Angeles. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday, July 21st. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Top stories, specific allegations against Russia and the downing of Flight 17. The death toll jumps in Gaza City. In sports, Rory McIlroy wins golf's British Open. And who comes out to play in Portland after dark, and why they might yell the word pepper? That report in about 20 minutes. We've got specific finger pointing by the U.S. at Russia in the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17. The Obama administration, for the first time, is now publicly charging Russian President Vladimir Putin's government with supplying the rebels the long-range rockets used in last Thursday's strike and also likely providing the separatists with training. U.S. officials said intelligence also showed the missile batteries used in the attack were returned to Russian soil shortly after the jetliner crashed, suggesting an attempted cover-up. Let's get further analysis from retired Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, senior intelligence officer trained by the CIA, now a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. He's with us live this morning. Good morning, Tony. Can you tell us, first off, more about this SA-11 rocket system?
Well, it's a very complex system. It's not something that you could basically take someone, give them 10 minutes of training, and then they point, listen for a tone, and shoot. This is a very complex system that requires at least six individuals who have detailed training. And so a lot of us who have been studying this issue for a while have recognized that you had to have a concerted nation state behind it. And beyond that, Gordon, one of the other issues has been the fact that a lot of us have known that the Russian army has special operations guys, Spetsnaz troops in there. So you put the two together, and what you see here is this picture that I think is very clear at this point, that the Russians were providing direct material aid to the separatists. And in this case, we still don't know the exact details, but it looks like it may be well a case that it's like giving a hand grenade to a five-year-old. You give them great technology, you train them to use it, but you don't give them the restraint, necessary restraint and accuracy to use it well. And I think that's what we're faced with right now, is a situation where it's gotten out of control.
How big are one of these missiles that would have been fired at this plane?
These things are approximately the size of about a half a telephone pole. The warhead itself is about 150 pounds, and it's designed to go off near the aircraft. The proximity charge is the primary way that it does its destructive work, by the fact that shrapnel shreds a field in front of it, and that's what actually does the damage. It punctures the fuselage and causes catastrophic loss of pressure in cases of any aircraft it hits. It can be used as a contact weapon as well. It will, blow up on contact. But primarily, and I think this is what they used for this one, it goes off about, probably about 100 meters away from the aircraft, just blows all this hot metal across the surface and opens it up completely to the air. And don't forget, these things are traveling at a high rate of speed, and that opening up to the air is what causes the catastrophic failure of the aircraft.
All right. Don't commercial planes have some system that indicates they're in fact commercial, not military?
Absolutely. In this case, I'm glad you brought that up. The Buk system, this SA-11, actually has safeguards. So the moment that the tracking radar starts tracking it, it starts looking to see if it's squawking, if it has some sort of a IFF or something else. In this case, my understanding is you would have had to manually override the safeties at least three times as the tracking radar took this aircraft on. That is to say that you get automatic warnings saying, hey, this is an aircraft, civilian aircraft, squawking on this frequency, don't shoot. So someone had to override those things, and this is where it becomes a mystery. Did these guys knowingly shoot on a commercial aircraft, and did they have authorization to do so, or was it simply guys who are basically trained to shoot the missile? They hit this button saying, don't worry about it, override, and shot it anyway, just not even recognizing the fact that this was a safety feature of that system in place to prevent the loss of an aircraft such as this. We just don't know at this point in time.
We're speaking with retired Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, a senior fellow at the London Center for Policy Research. He's with us live this morning giving us some analysis of the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17. Let's go back to the Buk system itself here, this SA-11. This is 1970s technology, correct?
It is, but it's been upgraded. Like many systems we have had over the years, the B-52, for example, was actually built in the 50s, but it's going to be flying through the 2030. This is another system which the Russians developed and have improved on repeatedly.
Okay.
It's actually called the SA-11, SA-17, because there's an upgraded version of it, which this system, apparently the one we're talking about in specific, has been upgraded. And so it has much better electronics, both from the acquisition radar, which is used to actually lock on an aircraft, as well as the other features which I just mentioned to you regarding safeguards, where if it's turned on, it's tracking an aircraft. It actually tries to discern rapidly, is it an enemy aircraft that can fire on or a civilian aircraft that should not? So these are all features which have been built in since technology has improved greatly since the 70s. And frankly, as I said, it's one of those things that these guys operating it should have been able to figure out very rapidly that they were not firing on a military aircraft.
All right, so your take ultimately here, Tony, is what? You suspect the rebels did this intentionally, if in fact it was the rebels, or you think this was some reckless mistake carried out by people with not enough training?
I think it is a tragic mistake that you had rebels who were trained by Spetsnaz, Russian special forces. Heck, I believe Russian special forces were outside the vehicle and it was fired. I just don't believe at this point in time the Russians or Vladimir Putin would have seen any upside to taking down an aircraft with 300 people on it. I just don't see that.
Yeah.
With that said, we just don't know at this point. And it's going to be a darn hard charge to get in there and try to find out exactly what happened, especially what happened within this this SA-11 when they fired it.
Yeah. Hey, listen, thanks for a few minutes. Much appreciated. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, retired, a senior fellow now at the London Center for Policy Research. 19 minutes before the hour now on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us, July 21st. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Grainger. Get what you need when you need it. Call, click, or stop by today. Get it? Got it? Good. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Here's something that few startup executives get excited about: human resources. But Wall Street Journal reporter Lauren Weber says startups in particular need to be prepared for personnel crises that can upend the workplace. And HR pros are finding they need a new set of skills to navigate these kinds of companies. Lauren, explain this.
This is typically something that the founders of startup companies don't think about or don't want to think about. You know, when you're focused on the next product launch or the next product update, the last thing you're thinking about is, you know, how are we going to do our year-end performance reviews? And should we be complying with the Family Medical Leave Act? But by ignoring that, a lot of companies end up getting in trouble, often around issues that bubble up with interpersonal relationships, which tend to be very intense at startups in particular.
How many employees do you need as a startup to begin thinking about this seriously?
There's differing thoughts on that, but people I spoke with said by the time you reach 25 employees, you should be thinking seriously about bringing on an HR professional. Others say it might be somewhere around 50. But, you know, really, if you're thinking about being around for the long term, the kinds of issues that HR deals with, which tend to be broad, everything from legal and compliance to recruiting to onboarding new employees to handling performance reviews and leadership development, these are probably things that founders and executives should be thinking about early on, even when they don't want to.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Lauren Weber. Let's say you reach that 25 employee level and you haven't begun to take care of this. What are some of the bad things that could happen?
Well, what we've seen recently, particularly with some startups out in Silicon Valley, there have been some very well-publicized incidents of accusations of sexual harassment and discrimination. And that's the kind of thing that can erupt very quickly, especially in the age of social media. You know, it's no longer just people gossiping around the water cooler, even necessarily reaching out to their lawyer and who files a complaint. It's, you know, somebody can post something on Twitter or even plenty of new anonymous apps, social media apps, where, you know, rumors, gossip, or allegations can fly around really quickly. They tend to explode. They distract staff at a time when, you know, those people should probably be focusing on product issues and stuff. And it's the kind of thing that can be avoided, again, if companies have put some infrastructure in place to handle those kinds of interpersonal issues. Again, one of the reasons why these tend to become a problem at startups especially is that startups tend to be populated in the early days by friends and acquaintances and even family members of founders. And so obviously you're bringing into the workplace not just professional issues, but also personal histories.
So how do you go about starting an HR team?
I think part of it is looking for somebody who's a professional. You know, I don't, this is not an advertisement for the HR field, but you do want to bring somebody in who has some experience with not only the legal and compliance issues, but also just kind of handling the stuff that makes an office run smoothly. So, you know, finding somebody who has some experience. Now, it's an interesting role, and it can, I think, be a tough role for an HR professional because you're often dealing with a founder who has a strong personality or multiple founders with strong personalities. And so you have to have somebody who's got a strong enough personality themselves that they can influence and advise the founders, but also, you know, have a solid grounding in the basics of doing human resources.
Thanks, Lauren. Wall Street Journal reporter Lauren Weber. 13 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Thanks for being with us. Good Monday morning. It's 9 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. The U.S. is leveling its most serious charges yet against Russia for its alleged involvement in the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in eastern Ukraine.
Because of Russia's linkage to these separatists, they have a greater ability to exert influence, and we need Russia to become part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Secretary of State John Kerry on ABC's This Week. The administration accuses Putin's government of supplying the separatist rebels with the long-range rockets used in last Thursday's shootdown and also likely providing the separatists with training. In Washington state, one fatality reported as a result of a raging wildfire.
This is becoming the new normal in the state of Washington.
Governor Jay Inslee. The forecast for cooler temperatures and diminished winds should help in battling the flames, which spread to almost 300,000 acres in just one county. Stock futures are a little bit negative this morning after a positive week for Wall Street. Overseas today, the major Asian market slipped, although the Nikkei was not open because of a holiday. This week brings updates on sales of both new and previously owned homes in the U.S. We also get the latest update on orders for so-called durable goods. Economist Joel Naroff expects an increase.
Fundamentally, the economy is moving forward, so we should see something in the range of about 0.5% or so, which really would represent a solid gain in durable orders.
Starting today, you'll pay more for TSA fees, which go to $5.60 for all flights. In some cases, that's more than double what we're paying. If you want to express your opinion, the public comment period runs through August 19th. Maybe you had an original one. 35 years after its debut, Sony's Walkman is strutting to a comeback. The ZX1 is aimed at premium buyers and has a premium price, too, of $700. Sony says each of these is manually carved from a block of aluminum, which helps reduce noise. No launch date yet for the U.S. as far as these go.
Wow. I had a yellow one.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I think so, yeah.
I think that's the durable version, right? Like the sport version of the Walkman. It was tougher. I actually had one of the original Walkmans or shortly thereafter when they were introduced. And I can remember thinking, this is such a terrific sound coming from such a small device. It was a big deal at the time.
Yeah, play cassettes, right?
Yeah.
The thing, yeah. I remember that. Well, that brought back some memories. So this new thing, not surprisingly, has a complicated tech name, right? It's, what do you call it? The ZX1. ZX1. Very
right,
good.
The ZX1.
Got it. Thank you, Gina. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Time now for a travel update, and it's brought to you by La Quinta. La Quinta Inns and Suites takes care of everything so you can take care of business. Book now at LQ.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-LQ. Here's something to observe or take part in if your summer travels bring you to the Pacific Northwest. Zoo bombing in Portland. 12 years ago this summer, zoo bombing was born. The zoo is because participants ride a commuter train uphill to a spot near the Oregon Zoo, and the bomb is for what happens after kickoff. Get this. Zoo bombers are a group of bikers who wait for darkness every Sunday. Their mission, to speed through town on tiny children's bicycles. Wearing everything from slippers to leather pants, about 15 riders recently took part. Tiny bikes are the zoo bomb's signature, and the smaller the wheels, the more glorious the rider. The ideal is the 12-inch, designed for three-year-olds, most Zoo Bombers in their 20s to 40s. Speeds can reach around 35 miles an hour. The Zoo Bomb rules are simple. No violence, no alienating women, and no riding that puts others at higher risk. Here are the safety protocols. If you see a car on a blind turn, you yell, car. If you see a police officer, you yell, pepper. By the way, police are comfortable with this because they say these riders actually police themselves. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. The people you work with, clients, vendors, coworkers, aren't always in the same office, city, or even country. You need to be able to meet with them in order to collaborate and get things done. But travel is expensive and time-consuming, and communicating via phone or email alone is not efficient. That's why millions of professionals in businesses large and small rely on Citrix GoToMeeting, and you should too. With GoToMeeting, hold as many meetings as you need with anyone from anywhere in one virtual space. It's the best way to meet from the convenience of your computer, smartphone, or tablet. Share screens to collaborate on projects and make presentations. Turn on webcams to see each other with high-definition video conferencing, all in real time. GoToMeeting allows you to engage and connect as if you're in the same room. Try GoToMeeting today and see what it can do for your business. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com. Click the Try It Free button and use the promo code WSJ. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code WSJ. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. For more, follow the Wall Street Journal this morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.